Welcome to the iLeach podcast. Now, have you ever wondered what the real human story is behind some of our key scientific papers? Or ever wish you could just sit down with the author and have a good old chat about all those things that never made it into print? Well, my name is Gemma Purser and I'll be your host for this special ongoing iLeach podcast series in which we're going to do just that. So, sit back and get yourself comfy as we take you on a journey that transcends the need for being at the right conference and at the right place and at the right time, and one which I hope will preserve the voices and stories of our scientific community for future generations of early career scientists. This is the story behind the paper. So on today's iLeach podcast, we are talking to Professor Belinda Medlin, who is based at the Hawkesbury Institute for the Environment at Western Sydney University. And on today's podcast, we're doing the story behind the paper. And the particular paper that we're going to be talking about today is reconciling the optimal and empirical approaches to modelling stomatal conductance. And that was published in Global Change Biology in 2011. So welcome to the podcast, Belinda.
Thanks for having me, Gemma.
Okay. It's really nice to have you, and I'm really looking forward to hearing the story about this paper. But before we start talking about that, can we first learn a little bit more about your career path, maybe, and what's led you to where you are now?
Yep. So I actually started my career with an undergraduate in maths, never studied any biology at all. After I did my undergraduate, I went and worked for a merchant bank for a couple of years and absolutely hated it. And I was really keen on bushwalking at the time. And I was trying to think, what else can I do? I like maths, but I hate the finance. And then I discovered that you could apply maths to anything. I was put in touch with my PhD supervisor, Ross McMurtry, who was actually a theoretical physicist working on modelling forest growth. And that was the perfect solution for me. I've really never looked back since starting that PhD with Ross. So I did my PhD, I went over to Europe for a few years, did some postdocs, made lots of connections and had great networks. But then we came back to Australia and I had two kids and went back to working part-time for about 10 years. So if you look at my publication record, there's a big dip in it. Uh-huh. Yeah. But as the kids got older, I gradually built my hours back up again and reconnected with all the old networks. And, you know, I've been able to rebuild the career from there, mainly by collaborating with loads of fabulous people.
Yeah, that's excellent. So let's get into the paper then. So could you maybe set the scene for us and tell us a bit about how the project came to be and how this kind of the start of the paper and how where it all began?
Yeah, so this paper is about stomatal conductance, which is a really important piece of plant physiology. The stomata are kind of how the plants, they exchange carbon and water. And so it's really the stomatal behaviour is how the plants control the trade-off. They've got to get as much carbon as they can whilst still minimising the amount of water that they use. This is around late 2000s. There were two different approaches to modelling stomatal behaviour. One was entirely empirical. It was just based on observations. So people had done lots of measurements of stomatal conductance and they'd seen that stomatal conductance tended to go up with photosynthetic rates, come down as VPD increased, come down as CO2 increased. And so there was a really well-known model called the Ball Berry model, invented by Tim Ball and Joe Berry, which was very widely used. But then there was a theoretical approach as well, which was invented by Ian Cowan and Graham Farquhar, where they had come up with the idea that stomatal behaviour was an optimization problem And so what plants were doing was optimizing that trade-off between carbon and water gain. And so we had a little workshop, small group of us, and we were sitting around in the living room in this house that my colleague Remco Dersma had rented, and just kind of chatting. And I asked the question, so, but how, you know, how different are these two models? And Remco was like, well, you know, they do the same thing. It's like, oh, well, if they do the same thing, we should be able to prove that mathematically. And so I went away and did some, I did one lot of maths to begin with, and realized that they were actually doing very similar things. And then I realized that someone else had actually done that maths as well. Mm-hmm. But the thing that wasn't quite fitting together was the response to CO2. So there was one part of the models where they seemed to be doing something slightly different. And so what I was able to do that was new was by coming up with a mathematical approximation to the existing model of photosynthesis, come up with a new derivation that had the right CO2 behavior. So it matched what the empirical models did, but it also was based on the optimization theory. And so that's why this paper is called Reconciling the Empirical and the Optimization Models, is because it found a way to show that these two things actually gave you the same prediction, mm-hmm. which is really powerful, because then you have a theory mm-hmm. behind a model that works.
That's cool. And so so you've kind of explained some of the kind of aims of the study, and then could you go on to maybe explain a little bit more about the outcomes as well, and then how the process of trying to write the paper and get the paper published and things like that?
Yeah, so we wanted to demonstrate that the model did actually work. So we contacted quite a few people to get hold of stomatal conductance data, and fitted our new model to a whole range of different types of types of trees, basically. Mm-hmm. We're looking at trees mostly, and showed that this new theoretical framework really provided a good way to understand the data that people had collected and to put it into an overall theoretical framework of why this forest was behaving this way and that forest was behaving that way. And, you know, that's actually a really powerful thing to have for modelers, because it gives you a way of representing stomatal behavior over time, but also across different ecosystems. That said, we had a really difficult time getting it published. So it went through three rounds of review at one journal and was rejected, and then went on to another journal for another three rounds of review. And we finally landed on one particular reviewer, whose name I won't say, but he's renowned for being really critical and for writing really scathing reviews. And we got one of these really scathing reviews. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he said, you know, I still think there's something in it. I think you've done something wrong. I think you can fix this little bit. And then I think it's still worth publishing.
Excellent.
So, yeah. And he was right. We followed his advice. We rewrote the model, readjusted the equation slightly, and then it was... yeah, it was accepted for publication, and it was, you know, such a relief after such a fight to get it through review. But then, and it was really well received, and a lot of people went, this is great, this is really useful, we can start modelling with this. But then about, I don't know, 8 months after publication, I was contacted by Colin Prentice, who was developing his own stomatal model. And he said, you know what, I don't quite get the same answer as you, Belinda. Can you figure out why not? Mm-hmm. And I realized with one of those, you know, moments of dreadful despair that I'd forgotten a constant of 1.6 in the equation. Mm-hmm. So stomatal conductance to CO2 is 1.6 times less than stomatal conductance to water vapor. Mm-hmm. because CO2 is a bigger molecule, so it diffuses more slowly. And that 1.6 constant is quite important. So we had to write a correction. So we had to rejig. You know, it didn't change the model, it just changed the form of the equation slightly. So we had to, we had to issue a correction, and I had to contact everyone that I knew that was already using this model to say, quick, you've got to change your results. This isn't right. So that was very embarrassing. But, you know, nonetheless, the model has really taken off, and it's really widely used and very commonly used in various different land surface and earth system models. That said, but it's also provided a kind of springboard because it provided a way of thinking about the empirical data in terms of a theoretical framework. It kind of was one of the papers that stimulated a whole new flowering of this field of thinking about optimal stomatal behaviour. And there's been many really interesting papers since which take this idea further. And do different things for the optimization. And now it's a really rich field of research.
Yeah, that's really good. I was going to ask you, like, one of the questions was, how, you know, what did research did it, like, lead on to for you then after this paper?
Yeah, so for us personally, we used it as a framework for a lot of research, particularly looking at global patterns in stomatal behaviour. So we went on to collate a huge database of stomatal conductance data sets from people around the world working on all kinds of different vegetation, and we were able to explain a lot of those patterns. And so we published another paper later on that was a kind of a global synthesis of stomatal behaviour. And really since then it's become my go-to framework for thinking about stomatal behavior. So in many different settings, I guess, you know, we've done a lot of heat wave research, for example, where the stomata are behaving slightly differently. And so now we're starting to think about, well, what is it about heat waves that makes stomata do something different? It's that kind of, you know, it just opens up a whole bunch of new questions to have a theoretical underpinning.
Yeah, that's really cool. And then, so I guess to wrap up, and that was a really nice story about the paper. And I guess early careers researchers listening to this might think, you know, like, is there any tips that you might have come across during the course of your career so far, like, that you could pass on to them?
Yeah, number one is check the units. Number one is just check the units on everything. Number two is, even if you think you haven't made a mistake, you probably have, so go back and check it. But number three is just kind of remaining open to ideas, like thinking about, so that whole set of research was really kicked off by that simple question that we were talking about in this workshop. It's like, well, how different are these models really? And so I think, you know, one thing that's really valuable for stimulating new research is to kind of have in your mind what you're expecting to see, and then when you see something that doesn't fit in with that expectation, that's when you've got a really interesting new question or angle to follow up on.
Yeah, that's good. That's good advice, because often we sometimes think, oh no, that's not what I expected, and maybe that's wrong then. You know, sometimes you could think, oh, I've done something wrong or something wrong. But if it's like, you know, maybe it's not wrong, maybe there's something more exciting there than what you thought. So
Yeah. But it's always really helpful to have an expectation in advance, because then you know when it's going counter to your expectations.
Yeah, thank you. So, well, thanks, Belinda. It's been really good to have you on the iLeaps podcast, so I really appreciate it.
Good to chat with you.
Thanks,
Gemma.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the iLeaps podcast today. It's been great to have you along. Now, just a couple of things before I let you go. Firstly, if you like what you heard today and you want to hear more, then why don't you hit the notification bell or that like button on whichever app you're listening to the iLeaps podcast in. And secondly, if you want to learn more about iLeaps, then we have a website, iLeaps.org, where you can find all the information about our current and past events. Thanks.